Let's start a podcast about our mental health. For no good reason why, let's call it Mindcake.
Bonsoir, mon ami. Oh,
Jesus Christ.
And welcome to another slice of Mindcake.
Mindcake?
With him,
Lee Crompton, and him,
Paul Beeson.
I think we're on episode 14 now, and that's possibly the worst one we've ever done. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
I'm good now. I haven't got to listen to your kettle brewing in your Travel Lodge little cafeteria area. Travel Lodge or Premier Inn?
Travel Lodge this time. Yeah, I'm in London at the moment, just down from Finsbury Park.
I was just saying, why are you down in London, Paul?
I'm getting some new headshots done.
Oh, has he got a wide-angled lens?
Why, for my big hair?
Yeah.
He might do.
He's got to have the Buffon lens on.
Yeah. No, it's my mate Ben Wilkin.
Hello, Ben.
Of Benkin Photography.
Does he listen?
I'll ask him tomorrow when I get my headshots done. Probably not. But I'll tell him to give him a shout out anyway. If you're in London, you need any photography done, Benkin Photography is the place to go.
The way you said that, as if we're sponsored. If you need headshots and if you're in London, make sure that you visit. Are we not sponsored by him this week, are we?
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
Maybe we should start doing that. Try to monetize this.
I'm sure people will be queuing up to be mentioned on this podcast.
Yeah, so how have you been since our last Mindcake, mate? It's been a while, hasn't it?
Usual, up and down. I was down at the commercial conference for work in London on Friday. I then caught the train to my mum's house, although she wasn't there. She's gone to Florence. Caught up with my godson, Luke, who doesn't listen to the podcast, and one of my best friends, Paul, who also doesn't listen to the podcast. He had his first bought pint, because he's now 18. So we went down Paul Key and had a pint or two. And then on the Sunday, I met up with Bob and we did a little run, had some brunch, healthy brunch. And then I went for a dip in the sea and it was Baltic, but did a bit of cold water therapy. And then do you know what I did? Back to my mum's and had a little meditation. So it was a very kind of chilled out weekend and I felt much better for it until I came to fly home last night.
From Southampton.
The flight was delayed for starters. Then I got a text from Gemma to say, can you go around to my sister's and pick up a car seat, which is just what I wanted to do when I landed at 10 o'clock. So eventually got in the house about 11 o'clock and then Erin decided to wake up for 3 hours during the night, screaming because she wanted to watch. I want to watch television. I want to go downstairs and watch television. So I was singing songs from Frozen at 5 a.m. to try and get her back to sleep. She eventually went back to sleep at 6 o'clock and then my alarm went off at 6:40 to get up for work. Within 9 hours of being back in the house, any well-being had been undone.
All your zen was gone.
On my zen been sucked out of my donut, I feel exhausted.
Is that why you're reclining?
That's partly why I'm reclining, yes. I'm just having a... If I nod off, just shout into the headphones. How have you been?
Oh, I've been all right. I got back from my tour.
It's all done.
Shark in the Park is all done for now. And what have I been doing? I spent some time with my daughter over the weekend. My daughter and been hanging out with Gail, because I've obviously not seen Gail for about 3 weeks. Gail was working up in Inverness, so I came back to an empty house. Well, apart from the cats, but so I have a couple of days just to sort of decompress a little bit after the tour. Delivered some rugs, picked up some rugs.
Oh, yes, of course.
Ruggy rascals back in town. And I went up to Inverness on Thursday and went out for dinner with Gail and her colleague. And then we drove back on Friday. And then Daisy came over for the weekend. And then I'm now down in London. And that's been my week. So it's been a bit
all over the place, haven't you?
Yeah, a bit all over the place, but still quite chilled.
You look pretty refreshed. You look pretty fresh.
Yeah, I feel. I mean, that's good considering I've just done a train journey from Edinburgh down to London this evening.
I mean, I'm mainly looking at your Rick Astley quiff.
It's good, isn't it?
That's tremendous. Someone's a bit Holly Johnson.
Oh, yeah. Americanos, blue jeans and chinos.
Blue jeans and chinos. Oh, dear.
There's a reference for the kids listening. Americanos,
yes, you know, by Holly Johnson. Wonder why our age demographic isn't under the age of 40, I wonder. Anywho, so this week we had the pleasure, both of us. Well, I say both of us. Yeah, you arrived late and couldn't get a word in edgeways.
Yeah, so our guest this week is Gary Owen.
Yes, Gary works with us at work, all things mental health. And I think he kind of introduces himself. So I think without further ado, we shall get into it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another slice of Mind Cake, where today we are privileged and honoured to be joined by Gary Owen. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Lee.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, looking forward to having a chat.
Yep, a bit of a chat. So we know each other through a work capacity.
Yeah.
And I thought how you explained a few things was very useful. So do you want to start with by saying, well, who you are, Gary, and what it is that you do?
Yeah, okay. So I'm a mental health specialist, I think is probably the best way of putting it. I do, I fulfill a variety of roles. I have a private practice, which is called Hope Springs, on the outskirts of Edinburgh. And I've been in private practice now for, nearly 20 years. And during that time, I've provided therapy for private clients. I've also been quite active in some training work with organisations across the country, some critical incident interventions, and some consultancy work. So it's a real variety of work that I do, but it's based, I think, in our private practice, where I provide one-to-one therapy and couples therapy and family therapy.
Ah, could you do some therapy now? Because I can hear my four-year-old screaming in the background. And
yeah, we work with young people too. So
well, I might bring her in tomorrow. You got any vacancies tomorrow?
we're a bit full up at the moment.
Okay, not all right. If you have any last-minute cancellations, Gary, let me know.
Will do. Yeah, I can hear.
So what I found very useful when you came in and spoke to us at work was I've been through various kind of treatments and therapies and what have you before. No one had actually explained like the actual fundamentals of what is anxiety, what is depression, and what does actually what's happening chemically in your brain when that happens. So do you want to talk us through that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. Let me give you a little bit of background. First of all, before I became do what I do now, I was a teacher. Teaching in a busy secondary school, and I had an interest in behaviour, particularly disruptive behaviour, at the time. And my interest took me got me the attention of the local authority, who asked me to do some work cherry picking from best practice around the country. And that was in the early 2000s. And I went off one day a week, and I would visit different places right around the country. And I ended up, well, I didn't end up. I visited an initiative in the centre of Glasgow, in a pretty rough part of Glasgow, where they have significant difficulties with young people's behaviour. And the key to what they were doing in this place was counselling. It was inspirational for me. And it was then that I decided to take myself back to university and become a qualified therapist, because I saw counselling doing so much good, and in ways that nobody else had really, the kind of making changes that really nobody else had. And I realised then that everybody had a story, but I also realised then, having spoken to some of the young people I worked with and I came across there, that they were almost exclusively, they were suffering from what I now know and what I discovered was anxiety. I did a bit of research into what do we mean by anxiety. We talk about it a lot. What do we mean by depression? And I think it's important that we all know that. So anxieties, more often than not, there are a number of causes of anxiety, but more often than not, anxiety is it's caused by the over activation of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. And you and I will know that best as the fight, flight, fright response.
Uh-huh.
And that's the system that causes anxiety. And let's say we're witness to, or we're caught up in a dreadful emergency, a dreadful say, a car accident or something awful in the community. And what happens when we are close by or when we're involved in something awful like that is that the hippocampus, that part of the brain that houses the amygdala and the hypothalamus, is activated, and it triggers a hormonal secretion in the brain and the body. And hormones go from the hypothalamus to the pituitary gland, from the pituitary gland to the adrenal glands, and they're just above our kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
And they open up and literally flood us, saturate us with principally two hormones. And firstly, adrenaline, that gets the heart beating, gets our muscles tensed. It tries to evacuate the contents of our tummy and our bladder. And the other hormone secreted is cortisol. And the cortisol raises our blood pressure and blood sugars. But put in simple terms, what's happening instantaneously when we become aware of something dreadful unfolding nearby is that we are transformed from a state of relative relaxation, neurologically and physiologically, to a state of hypervigilance, hyper-awareness, and hyper-arousal.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, we need to be in that state to deal with whatever's coming our way. And we'll do one of those three things. We'll either take flight and run for the hills if we can. We might fight against whatever's coming. We might take fright and freeze. And it's an unconscious process. So whatever we do, we don't always have time. We don't always have a discretionary powers over what we do. This that system will take over and dictate what happens next.
Mm-hmm.
That's why after an incident like that, people will often question us and say, "Blimey, why did you do that? How did you manage that?" And often people will say, "I don't know. I just reacted. It was a knee jerk," because that system is an instinctive one in the body. And after that event has passed, that same system is designed to, through a series of feedback loops, it should return us to a state of homeostasis. Our levels should go back to normal again reasonably quickly after the event. And sometimes we need a bit of help. You'll no doubt see on TV the aftermath of a road accident or an emergency where the paramedics, the medical attendees, wrapping everybody up in these blankets, these silver blankets, trying to help that process take place. That's what should happen. However, for some of us, for a variety of reasons, that system doesn't always reset itself properly. It becomes oversensitive. And it's not always situational. It doesn't always happen as a result of something, an incident. It can be inherited. We can inherit anxiety genetically. It can be the result of one dreadful, PTSD, for example. And it can also be the result of working in very stressful industries, very stressful jobs, or leading very stressful lives. The constant turning on and off of that system, the HPA axis, can lead to us then going on to suffer from chronic anxiety. Mm-hmm. That event, when we're called to react to an emergency, is called an event of acute anxiety. It's brief and it passes. And once it's passed, we should recover. However, many of us, for a variety of reasons, as discussed, go on to suffer from chronic anxiety. And that means that it's there all the time. We're in a constant state of hypervigilance, hyper-awareness, hyper-arousal. And it can make living life pretty complex and pretty difficult. There are some common symptoms that sometimes we will allow to go unnoticed. Disrupted sleep patterns, for example, waking up at 2, 3, or 4 in the morning, often with that busy mind going over what's happened in the day, or going over what we need to do tomorrow. And that's often an indication that that HPA axis is still too active and it doesn't want to let us sleep. It's trying to wake us up to attend to what it imagines must be a pretty difficult situation somewhere. But there is no crisis. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. We should be asleep. And
yeah.
So that's a warning sign. Sometimes we find ourselves carrying a sense of dread in our tummy and our, and it can sit for quite a while, for a whole day, sometimes more than a day. And it's a horrible, horrible sense of dread, or that feeling that feels like somebody's taken your guts and tied them into a knot. That's often a sign again of that over subscription of adrenaline and cortisol in the system. We can find ourselves getting involved in overthinking, even to the extent we might be sitting at home listening to our partner telling us about their day. And we're nodding as if we're listening, but we're not really. We're we're lost in our own mind thinking about what might happen tomorrow, what's going to, and it can take us away from the company of our loved ones. And that overthinking is another sign of fragility, sometimes very close to irritability or close to tears. Another sign that we've been in that state of hypervigilance, hyper-awareness for too long, and we start to become exhausted and tired, and tired in a way that not like any other kind of tiredness. And it's a real exhaustion, mm-hmm. and we become fragile as a result. So these are all symptoms that many of us will experience on an ongoing basis, but not really connect with something which is a health condition. Anxiety, yeah. Anxiety is a health condition like any other health condition that can be treated and can be addressed.
And I guess, like you say, so rather than, like you say, a car crash, or I've had that sort of incident before where there's an emergency and you need to react, and your body just goes into automatic pilot almost, versus, like you say, almost, and Nicola alluded to it in the last episode, where it kind of builds up and builds up and builds up gradually, rather than, you know, you can have that anxiety, you know, build up on a gradual basis, and then eventually does that then tip over into depression?
Yeah, well, depression's less, we know less about the neuroscience, the biophysiology of depression than we do anxiety. There are some medical reasons that, because anxiety is a hormonal condition, and there are lots of hormonal conditions that can lead to anxiety and onto depression, of course. But depression's chemical, whereas anxiety is hormonal. So what we know about depression is that it's the lack of serotonin in the synapses that can often go on to cause depression. There's nothing wrong with stress in itself. Stress is okay. And good stress is the stress that gets us up in the morning, gets us busy, gets us going to work, whatever it is that we need to do. That's the role of stress. And that's called eustress, E-U, eustress. When it becomes too much and it goes on for too long, it then turns into distress and we become unwell. If it goes on for too long, it becomes chronic and it becomes difficult to shift. And we understand, we're told that once we've experienced one episode of anxiety and or depression, we're then 50% more likely to go on and experience another one, and so on and so on. Those of us who work in very stressful industries, those industries that are very deadline-based, target-based, project-based, that constant going from one target to another deadline, it's activating that HPA axis in a way that wasn't designed to be activated. Some people only need one very shocking, a PTSD incident, for example. It's so shocking and so traumatic that the system is disinhibited to such an extent that it doesn't really rectify itself. We one of the things we know about depression is that long-term chronic anxiety, the overproduction of cortisol, seems to have an impact on serotonin. And it can deplete serotonin levels and impair the production of serotonin, which then goes on to cause some depression. And depression is different from anxiety. Anxiety is when we worry overly and we're too anxious about it. We get agitated about absolutely everything. And depression is when we don't care much about anything. Mm. But we can get a bit of mixed anxiety and depression. Quite a few people now attending our practice I've come along with a diagnosis of mixed anxiety and depression. So not only are these poor people struggling with this agitation, constant agitation, but they're also struggling to get up in the morning, struggling to get showered and dressed, and struggling to do just about anything. Mm-hmm. That mixed anxiety and depression, of course, is designed instinctively to compel us to do two things. Firstly, to avoid anything. So people often with anxiety and or depression will stay indoors. They'll crave those moments when they can get home, shut the front door, put the TV on, get something to eat, and just curl up. It's a natural instinct caused by anxiety and depression. And it also makes us want to seek comfort. And we'll find ourselves seeking comfort by going to bed too much of the time, comfort eating, alcohol, drugs. Again, it's a function of the system, our system, which is supposed to be there, but it's overactive and we don't need it to be. So Those seeking that disproportionately seeking comfort and avoiding life in general, work and so on, becomes damaging, and we become really quite reclusive, some of us.
Yeah. Well, sorry, just seeing Paul's on the Paul, are you there? Because Paul was a teacher before became an actor. So, hello, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
sorry, I think I joined just when you were sort of getting started, so I just listened to all of that with great interest, Gary.
Aye. Aye.
Really hit home some of that.
It's something that I think is so important. The basis of what we do in our practice is therapy, which is, and it's a talking therapy, and the talking therapies work in the same way as a physiotherapist does. The therapy and physiotherapy is applied by the therapist to the joint, the like wherever it is, and manipulated and exercises. In the talking therapies, the therapies is in talking, speaking out loud, hearing ourselves say out loud whatever it is that we say. In an environment that's confidential, it's non-judgmental, it's secure, it's bounded by time and confidentiality. So if we get it right, if we get the administration of it all right, and we're anywhere near good enough at it, it allows the person to talk in a therapeutic way, because we all have what we understand to be neuroplasticity. That just means that the brain's malleable, it regenerates, and one of the ways of doing that is through the talking therapies. However, my professionally, I just believe that there's much more that we can do if we understand that this is a health issue. It's about hormonal imbalance, chemical imbalance. Then there's lots that we can do outside the therapy room to look after ourselves. And that's when I get around to working with people on lifestyle medicine.
And that's what you were talking about when you came in was shed.
Yeah.
And I thought I didn't know this was a thing, Gary. I just thought this was something that you did at your practice until I Googled it. I was like, Gary, I came home and I was like, Gary's talking about this thing and it's shed and blah, blah, blah. And my mum sent me a link. She went, is it this? And there's like hundreds of books on it. And I was like, oh, it's a thing. So I did. Yeah. I wasn't aware. Paul, have you heard of shed?
No, I'd only heard of sheds because you told me about it, Lee.
Oh, okay. It's probably better Gary tells you about it.
Yes.
It's more than just shed. Shed's a useful acronym that people really switch on to. And books have been written on it. It's fairly well established in the kind of circles I operate in. But it's about lifestyle. And so much now is being done in terms of lifestyle. There was a piece of research that came out recently, which let us know what we've known for a while, which is lifestyle is at least as effective as medication in looking after mood fluctuations, disordered mood. So let me just talk through that. The shed, which has been around for 5 or so years, nearly 10 years, I think, is... it's an acronym that stands for, the S stands for sleep. Sleep is key. It's the cornerstone of good mental health. And we should all be getting between 7 to 9 hours of uninterrupted sleep. And not many of us do. And if we don't, and anxiety is one of the major obstacles to us getting uninterrupted sleep at night, because it often wakes us up during the night. So we become sleep deprived, which then makes us even more unhealthy, because other health issues start to be a problem. So that's the S. The H is for hydration. We know how important water is, not juice, not tea, but just water. Water is so important. If we become dehydrated, that means that that affects our mood dramatically. It also means that any aches and pains we have, we feel more acutely. It affects our decision-making, so hydration is so important. And of course, the E, is exercise. We know that when we exercise, we produce a natural neurotransmitter. And what we're trying to do is produce some neurotransmitters. They're the chemical messengers that help to regulate mood. And the one that we produce when we exercise is the endorphins. And that doesn't mean that we need to go and join the local gym. I've got nothing against gyms, but some people find them pretty depressing places, a bit too crowded, a bit too much for them. So any form of exercise that induces a bit of perspiration, gets us breathing, is enough to produce the release of endorphins that are so useful in producing and regulating mood. So some exercise, hopefully on a daily basis, something that's manageable and sustainable. And then the D, crucially, importantly, is diet. We know so much more now about gut health. And in my profession, we refer to the gut now as the second brain, and the connection between the brain and the gut via the vagus nerve is so important for our mental health. And we know that 90% of the serotonin, that's the other neurotransmitter that we're looking to try and improve on, 90% of that is produced in the gut. So the gut has to be working at maximum efficiency so that we can get the serotonin up into the brain via the vagus nerve. So diet, whole foods, nuts, seeds, fruits, veg, salad, you know, the kind of thing, high protein eggs, fish, unflavored chicken. It's so important. And as we talk through so much of this, you'll understand why modern day life really isn't designed for good mental health, because so many of the foods that we eat are processed and ultra processed. And so it's really just not good for us. We need to think about lifestyle, and people now refer to it as lifestyle medicine. And I like that term. As much as I like shed, I like lifestyle medicine, because I think we need to really promote that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that I say after we spoke in the office, which is, I think was last autumn.
Yeah,
me and Paul were talking about coming up with kind of New Year's resolutions, and we had Dr. Jan on talking about New Year's resolutions and why we ultimately usually fail at those, because they're normally, as she was saying, they're normally gym based. They're normally, you know, I'm going to go to the gym 3 times a week, or I'm going to, you know, or health based. I'm going to only eat salad for the next. And you generally fall off the wagon pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Whereas what I try and do is have like a shopping list of stuff.
Yeah.
So it might be that I meditate. It might be meditation. It might be a cold water shower. It might be, I don't know, 20 press ups or going for a run or whatever it is. And as long as I try, and it's not ideal, I know, you know, you should look after all of the acronyms, all of the shed. But if I can tick off at least 3 a day, so I might have time sometime to do 10,000 steps, but other days I might not feel like it or have the time to do that. But I might have time to have a cold water shower. So as long as I'm doing something that's, as Jan would say, a towards move, and like you say, looking after your well-being, then but like you say, it's almost spinning those plates, isn't it, to because you know all these four things are really, really important, but it's just how you kind of keep those plates spinning in modern life.
It really needs to be something that can be sustainably and manageably included into everyday life, not just one day a week and not just for the next 2 months. I think it really requires, and this is something we really talk about in our sessions here in our practice, is this, it really needs a change of life, and we need to start looking after ourselves and looking at other things as well. We would have talked before about the warning signs around caffeine. We need to look out for our caffeine intake, because it's a problem. Caffeine is remarkably effective at disinhibiting the hypothalamus, which just in effect causes us to become more anxious. So any more than 2 cups of caffeine a day, we think, is too much. And so many people with busy working lives are way above that. And you look at the young people just now who I come across, and so many of them drink a lot of these energy drinks, powerful energy drinks a day, which I think is just not a good thing at all. Our alcohol consumption, we need to look very carefully at that, because alcohol is a powerful depressant. It causes all kinds of problems. So I think it's, again, when people come and see us, we do the therapy, we do the talking therapy, but we also do the lifestyle stuff as well. And we talk about that a lot, and we try and help people to habituate good lifestyle. And just as you say, every day, if I try and get 3 things done, then I'm doing pretty well. Mm-hmm. And particularly where diet's concerned, that seems to be a big one for people trying to resist the urge to comfort eat. But, you know, if you stick with it long enough, you educate your palate changes, and you start to, when you want to something tasty, when you get home, you tend to look for something that's not only tasty, but it's pretty healthy as well. So it's important to stick with it.
I think we've had Charlotte on, who, well, we were supposed to be talking to her about bee therapy, but we ended up talking about all sorts of things, including nutrition and whatever, because she started off as a pharmacist and was doing farming and what have you. And just, you know, even if you choose to eat, in inverted commas, healthily, it's what that looks like. Because you were saying, like, you know, most of the chicken that's on our shelves now is not really got a lot of chicken in it. And it's, you know, in Coca-Cola, if you look at the greens and the you know, the barcode where it says, you know, you've got your greens or your ambers and your reds, it's the healthiest thing you could possibly drink. Well, of course, it's not.
No,
so
no.
I think, you know, and I very geekily did this thing on porridge and just trying to look at the differences between, you know, whether it's whole oats or rolled oats or whatever. It's actually quite difficult to, you know, even if you make that conscious decision to go, right, you know what, I'm going to eat healthily, to actually spend the time to get the right things in the shopping.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think once you get accustomed to it, once and in our family now, we pretty much all do it. We're much more conscious of it, and we look at the ingredients when we see something on the shelf, we'll turn it around and we have a good look at it, and we start to understand just what is good for us and what isn't, and we feel the difference after a good day eating, a good day's hydration with a bit of exercise in there. You should notice the difference. You should be reporting to those around you, I just feel better. And people say, what does that mean? Will I be happy? And I'm not sure what happy means, but I think what we're saying is that feeling that we would all like is at the end of the day and at the beginning of the next day, we've got an energy, a positivity, a sense of, I want to get up and I want to get busy. I've got lots that I want to do. That's what good mental health looks like.
Yeah.
Quite apart from different from people who want to get home from work quickly, shut the front door, get the comfort on, sit in front of the TV for the rest of the night. That's an indication that our mental health isn't in the best place. The other thing that we don't do enough of at the moment is being around people, being around good people in particular, because that peptide hormone, oxytocin, that is so good for our mental health, that's the one we get when we're around good people. And so much about lifestyle just now it is about being indoors, finding something to watch on TV, and we've lost the impetus, the opportunity, and we've lost the desire to get out and be around people. And I think that's so important as well.
Well, I think, like I say, I think it's modern life anyway, but obviously that was put into sharp focus with the pandemic when you couldn't really see anybody. Yeah, but
absolutely,
like you say, if you feel that you're using a slightly gone off a slight tangent, as is our wont. But I was at the London Screenwriters Festival the weekend. And again, being around those sort of people or the creative people who have got a similar mindset and whatever, just being in that tribe was hugely beneficial.
Yeah.
And it's just like you say, you feel great. And like I say, I think you know, whether it's a hobby or whether it's your friends and family, the right ones, not the wrong ones, surrounding yourself, like you say, with positive people and like minded people, I think is very healthy.
It's about remembering that if we can produce those good chemicals, those good hormones, the good neurotransmitters, serotonin, endorphins, dopamine, oxytocin, these are the ones that we're trying to produce. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility that we can do it fairly easily. If we can do that, then we're going to help our mental health. And the return we get is immediate. We'll feel better that very same day. We've got to do it again the next day. But if that's the motivation, if we need motivation, it should be the memory of the last time I felt really positive, a sense of energy, a real sense of, God, this is great. I really want to get busy. Then just remember that feeling, because it's not that difficult to produce, and we can do it ourselves. And often when we suffer from a bit of low mood, a bit of depressed mood, it's because we then go on and we lack the motivation to do just about anything.
Yeah.
So if you need some prompting, if you need some motivation, just remember the last time you felt like that, knowing that I can do something about that today, right now.
Like you say, the returns are pretty quick.
Yeah.
If I notice if I don't drink enough water, then that impact is fairly sudden. But likewise, if I then drink, you know, the next day or whatever, if you hydrate or you've eaten something, you know, you haven't had a big meal before you went to bed the night before, you feel that much better the next day.
And you'll know. I don't know if you if you drink, Lee, but if you drink, you the next day you'll feel pretty rubbish, even with the modest amounts of alcohol, because it's a depressant. However, it masquerades as a bit of a relaxant, because it gives that first little drink gives you a shot of dopamine, but the next day you'll feel pretty rubbish. And that's what a hangover is, of course. It's a depressive episode. So it's as quick as that. Just learning more about how this works, the neuroscience behind it, the biophysiology of it all, it gives us an indication about how we can look after ourselves. And I think we just need to focus on a bit more education. Hopefully schools, Paul's was a teacher, but certainly when I was a teacher, we didn't do anything on healthy mental health, anxiety and depression. We didn't teach the kids anything. And I think it's so important that we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Gary, we've only got a minute left. So yeah. I'd just like to say thank you ever so much for giving up your time to talk us through that. Because I was blown away when you came into the office, which is why I was keen to get you on. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Paul. Nice to meet you. I keep going with this. This is great that you're doing what you're doing. So I hope it continues to be as successful as it's been.
Thank you, Gary. No, appreciate it. Yeah. Take care.
Thanks,
Gary. Bye-bye.
So that was Gary Owen.
It was. Well, on the basis that you did most of the listening.
Yeah. So just clarify for the listener. So I had trouble getting into the Zoom chat whenever it was. I was on two. I was in a Premier Inn or a Travelodge and the Wi-Fi went down, so I couldn't get on. And by the time I did kind of arrive in the chat, Lee and Gary were in full flow, which is why you probably hear me say about two sentences and then say goodbye to him at the end.
He was
there. I couldn't
get
a bloody word in edgeways.
Now, you were there from, I would say, probably the first 5 minutes in.
Yeah, so I think after you guys actually started talking, about 5 minutes later, I was there, but just mostly in spirit. But it was great. I mean, I did enjoy listening to what Gary had to say. And all the cameras were off as well when I got in, so I was like nodding along and stuff like that, but nobody could see how engaged I was in it. So
no, I think there's a lot to be said for shed.
Yes. Yeah.
If you can just keep those four plates spinning in some kind of equilibrium. However, I would say that sometimes it's not as easy to say, you know, if you're in a certain, I know I've been in a certain frame of mind at times where you're so deep in sort of despair that it's very easy to go, well, yeah, like now you go, well, yeah, just drink 2 liters of water or just go for a run or just, you know, don't eat healthily. It's easy, but sometimes it's not. But as a principle, if you know, you can reap the benefits reasonably quickly. Obviously, you've got to sustain it. But I do notice a difference rapidly in either direction. Either I feel worse if I've not ate well or not slept well or whatever, but equally feel much better if I do keep hydrated and do a bit of exercise. And it's making it a habit, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, I've been there as well when at times it's difficult to even get the plates spinning in the first place, you know, even before you're sort of trying to keep them spinning together all the time. But yeah, it's a habit, and it's baby steps at times. And I guess it sort of comes back to your checklist kind of idea, where, you know, if you can tick off a couple of things from your mental health checklist a day, be that going out for a walk or a run or having a cold water dip or, you know, whatever it might be, and then you can kind of make that a habit, then you can start ticking off the next one, and then when that becomes a habit, you can tick off the next one or whatever. But absolutely, totally agree. And you know what was interesting as well was the links between what Gary was saying and what Nicola Wilson, our guest from the other day, was saying as well.
Yeah.
About the fight, flight, freeze kind of response that we have mentally in certain situations. And it goes back to that kind of early human instinctual thing we have in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they're Nicola and Gary are coming at it from slightly different perspectives, I guess. But yeah, it was good to hear that there was that through line in thinking between the two kind of outlooks. Do you know what I mean?
I wonder what angle the gas man would have come at it from, the one who then became a past life regression therapist.
Oh, that guy. Mm. Yeah.
I think you should go. I think I'll track him down and you should go after you said, oh, maybe it's just that you weren't, you know, open to this. You have a go then. See whether you...
All right. That was a great impression of me, by the way. Just that was spot on.
Thanks. I do all the voices.
That's exactly how I sound.
Mm. Talking of getting over the threshold and getting out there, did I hear a little rumour that you may be doing the Maggie's 50 next month?
Yeah, I'm planning to. Yeah, for sure.
Do you want to tell people who don't know what that is, what it is?
I will. Yeah, so every so often, Maggie's Cancer do a fundraising. Well, they do lots of fundraising things, but they used to do a thing called 50 miles. Was it 50 miles in January?
Mm.
Which myself and Lee have done on. Well, I've done it twice. Have you done it more than twice?
I've done it twice as well. It's mainly 50 miles of skating in January, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, they just did 100 miles in April. So, you know, the aim is to get sponsored and run 100 miles over the month of April. Now, I did think about trying to attempt that, but being on tour and not always being in a safe place to run, you know, staying in hotels in motorway service stations, there's not always the opportunity to get the miles in. But luckily, they are doing 50 miles in May, which is much more achievable. So I'm going to do it.
It's still a lot.
It is still a lot, but it's half the distance of the 100.
No, yeah,
it?
So but I think it equates
much more manageable.
Yeah, but when we did it before, does that not equate to like, was it nearly five kilometers a day?
It depends. Every other day, I think you could do. If you break it down, you could do. I can't quite remember. I started to run slightly longer, but do it every other day rather than trying to do it every single day just for recovery.
Mm.
And that's how I kind of did it. I think it was 5K every other day for me.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Because, yeah, otherwise that would be 30 days, 150K, which is not 50 miles.
Yeah. It might be 3K a day, is it, or something like that? I can't remember. You know what I'm like with numbers.
I shouldn't be relying on you for old Carol Vorderman over there.
Yeah. But I thought it would be a good thing to do because I haven't done any fundraising for Maggie's in a couple of years now. So I thought it'd be good to raise some money for a cause that's very dear to Lee's heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also, like, just so personally, recently in the family had some cancer stuff happen. So my auntie's just been diagnosed with breast cancer, unfortunately. So she's going through chemotherapy at the moment. My mum's cousin sadly passed away a couple of weeks ago, again cancer related. So yeah, so there's been a few things like that that's happened as well. So I think it's high time I pulled the running shoes back on,
mm-hmm,
and did some fundraising. So
on that basis, I know my next question is going to be, have you set up a Just Giving page so we can plug it on there? And your answer is going to be no.
Not quite yet. I will sign up as soon as this podcast has been finished recording.
It's the 22nd now.
Yeah, so I've got plenty of time.
Yeah, but the next episode, it will be due out in May. Plus, I suppose people can still sponsor you in May. You're doing it in May, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. You can sponsor right up until the last day in May, I suppose, can't you?
Mm.
And I was just going to say, we will share the link to whatever it is. I don't know, is it Just Giving or how does it... Is it?
Oh, hang on, no, it's not have to be done through Facebook.
I honestly can't remember. Actually, you're right, because I think in the past I've had to donate money myself for people who aren't on Facebook. They've squared me up after.
But, I bet they have.
Well, there was a couple who didn't. They shall remain nameless.
Mm.
But yeah, so we'll give that a good old plug over the next couple of weeks.
I did say that you'll be doing it.
Yeah.
Because I won't be doing it.
But that is fine.
Old me would have battered on and gone, yeah, I gotta do it, it's Maggie's. And but I think with the change in my medication, I'm not able to do it, and mm-hmm, I'm not going to push myself to do it because I think I'll knacker myself in even more. Yeah. So I will obviously be supporting you from the wings, but I've probably made the sensible, I don't normally make sensible decisions, but I'm going to make the sensible decision to sit this one out.
Yeah, but I think that is sensible because you don't want to get halfway through and then, you know, feel that you can't finish it. And so yeah, I think err on the side of caution this time, buddy.
Very wise. Okay, well, we'll keep track on that and your training and progress. And also, we've actually put on the social media pages the big thing that we couldn't reveal that we can now reveal.
the anticlimax.
No, it's not
the anticlimax. I said that weird, didn't I? The anticlimax. Yeah, is it? Did you share it on the socials? Did you? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, you did. Yeah. Yeah. So the thing that I wasn't allowed to talk about was that I was in an advert with Mr. David Beckham.
Whoa.
And I had to sign a non-disclosure agreement and everything and couldn't really tell anybody. Well, I told you, didn't I?
You told me my lips were sealed. However, yeah. I have watched the advert numerous times. And I don't want to say, I don't want to say that you're typecast, but I can't think what your line is. But you are quite, you know, after you're, come on, everybody, in the Crown.
Yeah.
I have to say, you're quite, you're like a camp Dexy from Dexy's Midnight Runners in this.
Yeah, I don't know why they made those costume choices. Really.
It's your voice as well, to be fair. It's not just the costume. I mean, the costume adds to the overall thing. But
yeah,
I'll screenshot because you kind of you turn around, don't you? You can't. Yeah, see that face. That face. That's the one.
That's the bad boy, right?
Yeah.
There. Yeah. But, well, the thing is, though.
Who's David Beckham?
Oh, hello. Come on, everybody, getting the
cue. Exactly. So is that what they're asking you to do? Or is it like a nervous tic where you just can't help doing it?
So just being camp?
Yeah.
No, so it was an acting choice.
Okay.
Which, you know, you might go, because it was just like this silly advert. But it's an advert for a mobile game. It's aimed at a younger audience. It's bright and colourful.
Mm.
You've got to kind of have a bit that kind of, I don't know, energy, I suppose. Like I couldn't turn around and go, right, you, let me join your Coin Master team or I'll batter you. Do you know what I mean?
You could have done that.
I could have done, but I would have been fucking sacked, wouldn't I?
Yeah, what was your line? What's your first line when you turn around and do that face?
Whatever
it is.
You know, if you want a better chance to win, you should join the daily tournament. Something like that. Yeah.
Come on,
you're on the ball, aren't you? Yeah. Can I just say as well, my you're on the ball, aren't you? Line was ad-libbed and they liked
was it.
Yeah.
Was it?
And the bit at the end, where I go, I have a coconut chai latte, mate. It's good for the zen or whatever it is I say. Again, that was ad-libbed.
So hang on.
So
did you actually have any lines other than the ones you've added in yourself?
Yeah.
All right.
It said in the script, react to David in brackets. Do you know what I mean? It was like a stage direction and I was like, okay. And then at the very end, it was like, disagree with David's choice of coffee or whatever. Like, it was just a vague stage direction.
Right.
Yeah. The only line that was properly scripted was the, you should join the daily tournament, because that's...
Because that's obviously part of the gig.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come away going, you know, 50% of that advert wasn't written by you, whoever the writer was, and they're probably making a lot more money than me. You know?
That's very good, though, if you've ad-libbed. I mean, you've still got it.
So I ad-libbed it, and then they decided to keep it in. So it was shot a few more times after that ad-lib. That one that you see never wasn't the first time I'd said it. If you know what
that
I mean? I'd ad-libbed it earlier.
You'd ad-libbed it 16 times previously.
Yeah, but after I did that, I'm like, oh yeah, keep that in.
Mm. I
was like, okay, cool.
Well, going on to your other acting paraphernalia, other performances, I would like to say that Erin, obviously your performance in Shark in the Park has had a profound influence on Erin.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, because she has said on a number of occasions now that she wants a telescope for Christmas.
Wow, that is impressive.
And I have bought a copy of Shark in the Park, the book, so I can now know what you mean about Jeremy Pope, who's he? Timothy Pope's dad with the big quiff.
Yeah.
Now
and the blue suede shoes and the
Yeah, I'm getting on, but I'm all over the park, Shark in the Park now.
Now there's three other books you can buy available in all good bookshops.
What are they called?
So you've got Shark in the Dark.
Oh, okay.
Shark in the Park on a Windy Day.
Right.
And Oh No, Shark in the Snow.
Very good. Is that all plugged? Oh,
that's them all plugged, yeah.
Excellent.
Well, Nick Sharrett, if you're listening, I want 10%.
Mm-hmm. Are we sponsored by him as well?
Well, we are now, I suppose. Now I've name dropped him.
Do you need a cracking children's book? Look no further than Shark in the Park. We should do this. We should, like I say, monetize this between us. I mean, you're an actor, voice actor, for goodness sake. goodness sake.
For goodness good, sake.
For goodness sake.
All right, Elmo, where did you come from?
I think I overdid it with the anecdotes last time, so I haven't got any anecdotes. Let's just cut straight to Tingly Digits. No, that was something else. Let's just cut to...
Oh, pieces of housekeeping. Oh, how very lovely.
Hang on, just before we do, does that mean we're not going to get the Lee Crompton's Anecdote Corner jingle this week?
Nope.
Oh.
It's having a week off. It was in about three times last week.
I know.
I think people get a bit bored of it.
I never get bored of it.
I never get bored of the jingle, but I don't think you can top the Isambard Kingdom Brunel anecdote. So I peaked too soon.
You peaked in episode 12 or whatever it was.
That's it. That's it.
Okay. Housekeeping?
Housekeeping. How very lovely.
Ooh. That was my camp face again.
Just can't help it.
So you can email us at sliceofmindcake@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Mindcake Podcast. And you can find us on Facebook if you just search for Mindcake.
I did
please
actually.
Please get in touch.
Yeah, please get in touch because I checked the emails just before we came on and there's a couple of spammy ones.
Yeah.
And people nominating other people to come on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah, we have a big list of potential.
Oh, we do. Yes. There's about 80 folk on a spreadsheet who have all applied of various colours and creeds and backgrounds. Some interesting characters. Anyway, that's for another day. What are you laughing at? Can I not say colours and creeds and backgrounds?
No. It's just such a funny thing to say.
The neurodiverse.
You haven't seen any of them. You don't know what color they are.
I have. I've Googled some of them. The neurodiverse wrestler. I've Googled him.
Oh yeah. Mm.
Right. Well, I think that's probably enough of us rambling on for another week.
Yeah, but just a short one today.
Hmm. Well, you say that, still probably an hour.
Well, yeah, but you know what I mean? Like, without the meat of the sandwich, the bread is a little bit thinner this week.
Yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, no.
Okay, mate. Right, well, I'm going to go to bed.
Yeah, I think I'll do the same.
You draw the curtains on your little travelodge room and have a little noddy no-nos. You need to be nice and fresh for your headshots tomorrow.
I do. I should,
remember to brush your hair.
Well, I can't forget to brush this bad boy, can I?
No, that's true. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Let's start a podcast about our mental health. For no good reason why, let's call it Mindcake.
We don't hang about.
No. I'm not even sticking that on the end.
Yeah.
No.